chapter 45 concluded. About 50 people were on that block of the street, and they all seemed to be wandering in a sort of dazed way. When Ron heard the screaming, he grabbed Rhonda's hand and said quickly, "Let's get out of here." They jogged back toward Constitution Avenue, where Ron felt everything was too beautiful to be other than safe. When they got to the corner, there was a sound like gunshots. There was a rising cloud of smoke, and they saw people running frantically from around the corner of the National Art Gallery. They were joined by another group that ran down the street alongside the Federal Trade Commission. Instinctively, Ron and Rhonda ducked back into the recesses of the IRS building. An angry scene exploded in front of them alongside the Justice Department as marchers stormed around the side of the building, trying to escape the tear gas that had been lobbed into the area. They began pointing and screaming at the balconies of the Justice Department. Ron looked up and saw what appeared to be officials and cameramen looking down at the scene. The marchers were goose-stepping and shaking their fists up at the balconies. They chanted, "Jump! Jump! Jump!" A volley of shots came from behind the blockade set up at the far corner of the Justice Department. A canister exploded about 50 feet in front of them. Ron instinctively turned toward the doors of the IRS building. He was staggered by the line of National Guardsmen that stared back at them from inside the building. Their images were distorted by the glass doors. He turned back toward the street. He couldn't see the Justice Department through the smoke that was choking both of them now. When he looked up, all he could see were cameramen on the roofs, all shooting down at them. He grabbed hold of Rhonda. They ran. Ron was sure that troops were going to burst out of the building with fixed bayonets at any minute. His brain was beating out the message that this was a setup. "What the fuck is going on here?" he screamed at the line of soldiers and patrolmen who were set up at the end of the street. They stared straight ahead, and Ron felt them start to flinch like they were preparing to move forward. They turned and ran back down the side of the IRS building. From the time he had screamed, Ron had begun to choke hard, and now he was crying uncontrollably as the smoke burned his eyes. He couldn't really see anymore, and then he couldn't feel Rhonda's hand. He felt her hit the pavement in back of him. She had tripped on her coat and torn away part of the lining. He helped her to her feet, and they ran again. They almost stumbled into a Jeep. "You can't pass through here," said an official voice. "This demonstration is being contained in the area immediate adjacent to the Justice Department." "Just let us out," screamed Rhonda. She reached down, grabbed her torn coat lining, and held it up in front of the policeman. Neither of them could distinctly make out what she was holding through their visors and smoke. It only succeeded in making them more nervous than they already were. Ron grabbed Rhonda's hand and bolted through the barricade. He didn't give a fuck anymore. They were going to have to knock him down to keep him from getting out of there. He ran straight for it and ready to throw his shoulder at anything in his way. They got through and kept running. They'd gone about half a block when they heard the loudspeaker from in back of them. "There is no permit for this demonstration. Since you have not left the area in an orderly fashion, you are all under arrest." The announcement was followed by another loud burst of canisters. They wandered down the street for several more blocks. The tear gas seemed to be following them everywhere. Their heads were throbbing badly. "Let's stop for a minute," said Ron. When they slowed down, they both began to cough again. Rhonda puked. The streets were filled with sirens. "I feel really sick, Ron," she said, gagging. They stopped moving, and he held her up and tried to grab control of his ability to talk. Then they started to look for the car. They found it rather easily, and their first reaction was complete relief. Everything was going to be okay now. After a half an hour of waiting, they started to shiver. They're running, coughing, and general excitement had built up a sweat that was starting to freeze. "I wonder what time it is," said Rhonda. "They gotta be back soon. I don't see how anyone could stay in there much longer." They huddled against the car. Ron tried to squeeze her tit, but she said she was too sick. Everything was just a long blur. Ron thought about the time his father had taken him to the swamp to shoot rats. "Put your hand here," said his father, fixing Ron's fingers around the trigger. "Now, sight your target and just squeeze." Ron did as he was told. His father and his father's friend watched him, closed his eyes, raised his barrel in the air, and pulled the trigger. Ron was immediately knocked to the ground by the recoil. His hand stung and his head was ringing. Then he heard and saw the men laughing. "I guess I forgot to tell you about the kick, huh?" said his father. Ron gave a dazed nod and the men laughed harder. He felt Rhonda rest her head on his shoulder. "It must be hours," she said. They had been watching people coming up the street, crying, bleeding, vomiting. The traffic seemed to disappear, and a dark, choked haziness settled over everything. "This has just been too weird," said Rhonda. "I don't know what we thought it was going to be like," said Ron. All at once, he felt very tired. He wanted to believe that people were crying from more than just the gas. He got mad at himself for that thought. "I'm still thinking with the mental weight of a sitcom," he scolded himself. He flashed on the one where the funny long dog would talk and the fat politician kept his daughter from getting laid whenever he could. Rhonda shouted, "They're here." Ron looked up to see their companions arriving in another car, laughing and then waving to the people who had dropped them off. "Where have you been?" demanded Rhonda. "We met some friends and went over to a party in Georgetown," they said. Rhonda whirled on Ron accusingly. He shrugged his shoulders. "I didn't know about any party," he said. "Of course you didn't," she sneered. "Ron's idea of a good day was having us beaten and gassed," she announced. "Let's just get out of here," said Ron. When they got back to Rhonda's house, she told him she liked him and admired him, but didn't think they were the same type. "I think you're right," said Ron, in a tired voice. "But you know, when we were in the soup back there, I thought you were okay." She smiled. "You were pretty good yourself." She let him kiss her goodnight. He decided that since it was the last time he was getting his hands on it, he wanted to squeeze her magnificent ass for as long as he could. It struck her funny because she read the thought in his face and let him grab it for at least a minute before she laughed and pushed him away. Ron found Hank reading in his room, sitting in the chair Ron invariably used for a closet. By the time he'd gotten home, all he wanted was to smoke a quiet joint, sit in the backyard behind the garage with a hot mug of coffee in his hands, take a hot shower, lay down with his pad and pen and books. He had almost dreamed about the plan on the way home from Rhonda's. He walked into the room having totally forgotten about Hank. "You're back," said Hank, nodding his head and putting the book down. "Ah, shit," said Ron before he was able to stop himself. He dropped his coat in the middle of the floor, walked into the bathroom without saying another word. He took an extra long shower in the hope that maybe he could wash Hank away with everything else. It didn't work. Hank put the book down for the second time when he walked back into the room, wrapped in a towel. "Well, how did it go?" said Hank. "Exactly the way I should have expected it to go." Hank nodded. "We heard on the radio that there was some trouble and some people got arrested. It was a war zone. It was the National Guard's way of bringing the war home and getting a piece of the action for themselves." "Nixon fucking sucks. I wish they had sent him to Vietnam. Hank didn't answer. He stared first at Ron and then down into his lap at the closed book. His concentration seemed to be drifting. So what have you been doing all day? What have I been doing? Repeated Hank in a way that was really starting to annoy Ron. I guess I haven't been doing much of anything. You're still hung up about the Jolie thing. The Jolie thing, Hank repeated, shaking his head sadly. You gotta snap out of this shit, man. You're getting to be like a fucking zombie. Can't you feel it? I can't feel too much at all. Ron flopped onto his bed, tried to make some notes. Hank sat with his hand in front of his mouth, staring straight ahead. Finally, Ron said, It was a setup, man. They drove us up a blind alley and gassed us like a bunch of concentration camp prisoners or animals. Hank didn't answer. Ron stood up and moved to the record player. He put on his copy of Jefferson Airplane's Volunteers and turned We Should Be Together up very loud. Marjorie was at the door almost immediately. She knocked on it and opened it in the same motion. Do you think you could have some consideration for us? She stared at him and waited for an answer. I'll do anything you want, if you promise to just leave me alone, said Ron. Your attitude stinks, said Marjorie. You don't care about anyone or anything. Look, said Ron, getting back on his feet. I've been cold, gassed, and generally crapped on all day. If you want to have your crack at me, just let me know beforehand so I can get out of here, okay? She glared at him. You're a miserable bastard. She started to back out of the room. A miserable, rotten son of a bitch, she said, and closed the door. And you wanted to come here and stay, said Ron to Hank. I just want to say one more thing, said Marjorie, walking back into the room without knocking at all this time. You don't have to live here, she pointed at him. You've got a pretty good racket for an oaf your age. No rent, no responsibilities. You quit your job with a wonderful future and great benefits to go back to school. But you haven't got a right to ruin my life. You haven't got the right to walk around the house in your moods. You haven't got the right to make my house look like a pigsty. You want me to move? I'll get out tomorrow. Let's face it, said Marjorie, striking a pose with her hand on her hip. How would you be able to live? You'd starve in a month. Ron said, I'm getting out of here. He turned to Hank. You like it here so much? You put up with this crap. George waddled towards Ron's room at a serious pace. He had been trying to watch this movie over the fight and had missed a good scene. With Christmas just in front of them, he had an incredibly hectic week coming up. That's enough, he screamed. I don't want to hear another word out of either one of you. Marjorie screamed back. Who do you think you're talking to? What am I supposed to do? Just sit around like an old fart all the time like you? Hank watched the bewildering patterns of logic that were playing out in front of him and searched for some clue of what had happened to Jolie and him. George said, You're an animal, and your son is a spoiled brat who needs to have somebody kick the shit out of him. Ron advanced toward George with his fence clenched. Want me to tell you what you need? Marjorie stepped between them. Just stop it, Ronald. Ronald went to his room, started to pull out fresh clothes. I've had enough. I'm leaving. I don't want you to leave, said Marjorie. I'll stay out of your way, and we just won't have very much to do with each other. I gotta get out of here for a while, said Ron. He stared at Hank. I need some privacy. The next day, Hank told his mother that he hadn't ever really married Jolie, and that it was over now. He was bringing his things back home. Jolie wasn't there when he got to the apartment. It took him a couple of hours to pack up his things. He worked at a slow and comfortable pace. He was happy that he hadn't seen her. It would have only made things worse. It was over now, and he told himself that he had no reason to ever see her again, and he didn't want to set foot in Wellmont either. Hank started to smile. He walked out of the apartment and slammed the door shut. He left the keys on the kitchen table. He walked briskly to the car and started it up right away. He liked the clicking of the engine. He turned around at the world outside the car. For the first time in months, he felt like the Crusader Rabbit after a successful raid on a cabbage patch. "They didn't get me," he said. What surprised Ron most was that there was no penalty for failure. He got his first semester's grades, and of course, he failed his Western Civilization class. At first, he panicked about how he was going to explain himself, but then the thought that he didn't need to explain himself to anybody crept in. He simply told his mother he'd gotten 2 B's and 3 C's. She said that she thought he could do better and that he would get the hang of it in time. None of the school officials said anything to him about his failure. The truth was that he'd been awarded 12 credits. 1 B, 3 C's, and an F. Now it was time to get on with things and start the next semester. Chris Calvin asked Ron if he would be interested in moving into a house that he was putting together. Rod told him that he didn't have any money. Chris showed him how it just wasn't true. All it took was the right combination of grants, reduced tuition, and another loan to make ends meet. Chris also gave him a part-time job tending the art gallery on campus. For $5 an hour, he sat in an empty art gallery that still lacked paintings and did his homework 3 hours a day. Lashley had given him a B. He ended the course by introducing the subject for the next semester. The 20th century. Ron was very excited by the thought of it. This was his life now. It was exciting. It was unreal. It was what he always kind of hoped for, except, well, he never really did get laid much that semester. On the first day of the second semester, Ron introduced himself to a girl named Gail. She had a tight, chubby ass and fat, bouncy tits. "I know who you are," said Gail, smiling. "Just about everybody around here has heard of Ron Tuck." Ron felt his cock harden. This is what he called living.